Good evening and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Colleen Katow. Katow is a political activist, a singer-songwriter, and she also teaches women's studies and Spanish at SUNY Cortland. Welcome to the show, Colleen.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
Listen, I know you lend your voice to many causes and often use your music to communicate your messages. Well, what came first for you? Was it activism or music?
Well, I think really it was music. But there's a continuous flow, I think, between music and activism. I grew up on Long Island, you know, and went to a Catholic school. Mm. And I had really progressive nuns. That finally, they were like the saving grace, you know.
Progressive nuns?
They were, yes.
Never
they were
heard
progressive.
Of them.
They didn't wear, you have the habit. Just the last 2 years I was there.
Uh-huh.
And so I was introduced to people like Cesar Chavez, and it was, you know, the tail end of, you know, kind of like it was the early 70s, and so they were just so anxious to, you know, expose us to the movements that were happening, the movements of the time. And mm-hmm. Before that, I was really sheltered, and that awakened me somewhat politically. But even before that, I was always singing all the time.
Uh-huh. And were you always writing as well?
No, that came a lot later. Uh-huh. Songwriting came a lot later. I would do a lot of imitation of Joni Mitchell and. Mostly her. She got me through high school, too, you know. I think she got a lot of people through high school.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And Carly Simon and
were you influenced by
Carole
Joan Baez
King.
As well?
Joan Baez
political
somewhat.
Uh-huh. Singers, yeah.
Yeah, political singer. Uh-huh. And I did. A lot of her music resonated with me. You know, Bob Dylan.
Uh-huh.
Someone in my family had the Woodstock album. That was a standard.
So do you remember when you first wrote your first song and what
yes,
prompted it?
I actually do. I'm kind of glad you asked that question because it was about... It was in 1988. That was the first song, and I was actually on the island of Vieques visiting some friends, and they had a beautiful house there, and Vieques is the little island off of Puerto Rico. A lot more people know about it now because of the press that it's gotten in the last few years because of the U.S. bombing site there,
mm-hmm.
and they were actually test bombing there, and I would look out into this idyllic, you know, scene. You know, the ocean, the blue sky, the incredible foliage, you know, mm-hmm. the mangoes you could pick from the tree. And then, I mean, just, you know, so many, you know, and this abundance. And then you would hear the bombs falling and shake the house, literally. And it just, I mean, I had been, you know, very political up till then and was going to a lot of marches and things like that. But it just rocked me to the core, you know, and I started writing about that.
Uh-huh.
So that was really, that was the first song I think I wrote. But I wouldn't perform it. It wasn't a very good song.
But that's okay. The beginning is what counts.
Yeah.
The beginning of that,
mm-hmm.
that consciousness.
Yep.
You're also involved in the Sister City Partnership between Cortland and Ithaca. And talk to me about that.
Yeah, we were talking about that. As you know, I actually haven't taught women's studies yet at Cortland. I'm on the list to do so, but I have taught it at other institutions.
Mm-hmm.
But I teach Spanish and I teach courses in Latin America also, and I've traveled quite a bit to Latin America. And a few years ago, a friend of mine, who's a wonderful, amazing activist, full-time actress, she's a retired psychiatric nurse, Ann Tiffany, and she was talking about having gone with a delegation to Colombia to a place called Cajibillo, and she met there a woman named Marilyn Serna Salinas, who was part of an incredible organization called the Movimiento Campesina, you know, de Cajibillo, Small Farmers Movement of Cajibillo.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many people really are aware of the incredibly violent situation in Colombia. And there's many, you know, armed actors, they're called, that really wreak havoc on the rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
And so this Movimiento Campesino was actually forging and continues to do this a wholly nonviolent movement,
mm-hmm.
based on earth-based, based on the land. And so because the organization there is so strong, and they had really incredible leaders too, and we thought that there could be an affinity with this region of central New York, which is, you know, quite rural. And so we formed a sister city partnership with Cajibillo.
Wow.
But it's a central New York sister city partnership. So it's really wonderful. So we get once a month, we meet at my house because it's in Cortland. So it's halfway.
It's
like the middle ground, you
uh-huh.
know, between the two places. And we have, there have been several delegations that have gone to Cajibillo Representatives from the movement have come up here, and they've exchanged incredible information with, they met with the Onondagans, they met with the organic farmers, they did a tour of, you know, campuses too, so as fundraising. And the idea, I think the main idea is that it's not, you know, the U.S., you know, helping the people of Colombia. It's not about that at all. It's like this mutual exchange
it's
and support.
It's not patronizing, in other words.
Not at all, no. And it's been, I had the fortune to go there last year at around this time, and it was an incredible thing because it really inspired me in terms of my own artwork and music and writing, because one of the things that I noticed that's perhaps a little bit different than here, although there are some parallels, is that the arts are very strong and they're very localized. And you'll see young kids, you know, like 16, 17, writing about Cajibio, writing about their family, writing about their reality, which is very beautiful, you know. So I feel like I learned a lot. And we know we have a lot more to do. It's going to be a long-term partnership.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. You've been focused on Latin America a lot in your career. What made you interested in that part of the world from the beginning?
Well, a large part of it was because I was kind of coming of age when there was so much turmoil in Central America, Nicaragua, El Salvador, Guatemala, and I learned about that, it really politicized me. That plus feminist issues, both, I think, together, in a separate way. But that really politicized me about, you know, the U.S. government policy, this policy of militarization to support, businesses, you know, like just current, like 2 days ago, the passage of CAFTA, which was, you know, a disgusting thing. If you saw the politics behind that, it was very much backdoor politics, arm twisting.
And it barely passed.
It barely
there's controversy
passed.
About whether it passed fairly,
Right. They call it a madrugón in Latin America, this kind of deal, you know, because it happens in the wee hours of the morning. And also, one of the things that was so remarkable about the nonviolent movements, or even, you know, then in the 80s and the 70s and 80s, the movements against dictatorship and against the U.S. intervention was the role of the arts. And I was very influenced by this movement called Nueva Canción, the new song movement, of which, you know, Violeta Parra of Chile and Victor Jara of Chile were a part. They were incredible singer-songwriters. Mm-hmm. Silvio Rodriguez, Guaraguao, Guarda Barranco, all these different groups that, and actually it was a continental movement. You know, people would sing each other's songs across country, boundaries of country, know each other's songs, share. Poets put poets' lyrics to music, and the melodies are just incredible, and they're so alive today. You know, you don't just hear the song once and that's it. They're really long lasting because they're so powerful.
Yeah, I've always thought music and poetry is an integral part of any kind of politics or change that you can affect in the world. Culture is so important, and I wish the schools in this country would realize that. Because a lot of cultural education is going out the window.
Yes.
The diversity is an important issue for you, and I want you to sing a song and tell us about the song that you're going to,
sure.
to sing to us.
Well, I actually used to commute to Ithaca. I taught at Ithaca College for a few years, and in my commute, you know, it was sometimes long, depending on where I was, you know, commuting from, and I would listen to the radio, you know, sometimes. Then I discovered, you know, wonderful stations like WBOS. and I would do a scan, you know, and see, okay, what kind of voices are on the radio today? And usually it was always 11 stations that I would get in clearly, just with this on a scan kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it was usually about 9 male voices and 2 female voices. So, and then I heard this country music, this kind of grassroots song, and I heard that melody and I kind of came up with this song. And it's called Boys on the Radio. So I will sing it for you. And if anyone's listening out there, at the end they could make you can all make a big whoop or something, because we're supposed to make a different sound at the end, and you can too. Okay.
Well, you only hear the boy on the radio, and you hear the girl once in a while. And it's not that boys any better, but they got control of the dial. Oh yeah, they got control of the dial. It's an unjust world, it's a sexist world, when you only get to hear one kind of sound. It's an unjust world, it's a sexist world, but we're gonna bury that in the ground. Oh yeah, we're gonna bury that in the ground. Well, you only hear the white on the radio, and you hear the color once in a while. And it's not that the white is any better, but they got control of the dial. Oh yeah, they got control of the dial. It's an unjust world, it's a racist world, when you hurt for the tint of your skin. It's an unjust world, it's a racist world, but we're gonna have to change our living. Oh yeah, we're gonna have to change our living. Well, you only hear the rich on the radio, and you hear the poor none of the while. And it's not that the rich are any better, but they got control of the dial. Oh yeah, they got control of the dial. It's an unjust world, it's a classist world, when a few have the most for themselves. It's an unjust world, it's a classist world, but we're gonna rearrange the wealth. Oh yeah, we're gonna rearrange the wealth. Well, you only hear the U.S. on the radio, and you hear the other once in a while. And it's not that the U.S. is any better, but they got control of the dial. Oh yeah, they got control of the dial. It's an unjust world, it's an alley world, when you only get to hear one kind of sound. It's an unjust world, a monoculture world, but we're gonna bury that in the ground. Oh yeah, we're gonna bury that in the ground. Oh yeah, we're gonna make a different sound. Oh yeah, we're gonna make a different sound.
Ooh, ah, Bravo, thank you. That will never be called a number one hit on a commercial station. That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Yeah, thank you. It's a very basic song, but
it's great.
It says something new.
And it's, you know, things have even gotten worse with all these corporations buying up radio stations and turning them into one entity. So
yes,
it's absolutely apropos at this moment
thank
in time,
you.
Too. Listen, I want to talk to you about this subject that's been on my mind for a long time. I know
mm-hmm.
you teach Spanish.
Yes.
And there's not a lot of emphasis on second languages in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Like there is in Europe. Who are the students that pursue language nowadays? And
well, you know, it's really incredible at the SUNY Cortland experience. My classes are full, you know, for instance, this semester, and there's more and more people learning Spanish, wanting to learn Spanish, to become teachers of Spanish. There's a shortage of teachers of Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really quite a profession right now. And you know, there are articles all the time in, you know, the Chronicle of Higher Education or in business journals talking about the edge that students have if they're bilingual.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that there is quite a resurgence. And with Latinos, you know, being such a major part of the U.S. population mm-hmm. and growing, you know, as, you
oh,
know.
Yeah, especially in places like California. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and Florida and New York,
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
it's really, really great. And, you know, not just Spanish, you know, any language. Spanish, of course, is the most popular language, but people are wanting to learn Italian, they're wanting French, German, Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is, I think, a little bit of a sea change in terms of that. And I think the provincialism, you know, that has been so much a part, you know, of the mainstream culture is really changing. And it's a really good kind of, it's a hopeful alternative to kind of this jingoistic attitude,
mm-hmm.
you know, that
mm-hmm.
people, you know, are, you know, government representatives and things like that. I mean, this kind of insularity that they have,
mm-hmm.
you know, or where they just use language, you know, they're not, their meager knowledge of language to kind of control things, to usurp,
mm-hmm.
you know, power,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's really, really changing. And I can see that in the academic setting. For instance, I was just down in New York this past weekend, and I saw Lila Downs, one of my all-time favorite musicians at the moment, but she's my all-time favorite musician. But she's just wonderful, and the crowd was totally mixed. And she's amazing because she sings in English, in Mayan languages, in Spanish, and she writes about real things. I see her almost as a continuation of this Nueva Canción movement that we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an incredible crowd, and people knew her lyrics, and there were Mexicans, and there were Colombianos, and there were gringos, you know, in Central Park. She gave a free concert.
Wow.
And then I saw another group that was, they were from the south of France, but they're touring in the U.S. doing Spanish songs, kind of, you know, that they've gleaned from their time in Cuba and Mexico. And so it's really wild, you know, you see this whole kind of world music that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And
that is really encouraging.
Yeah,
because,
it really is.
Because you still hear from on high that you know, they weren't even hiring interpreters for Iraq if they were gay. And, you know, so they're keeping language in some ways away from
right.
where it's best used.
Oh, exactly.
And so on, you know.
And, you know, language is a part of culture. And so if you, it's almost a dangerous thing. It can be like a subversive thing
oh,
to
is.
Know another language. Because
mm-hmm.
then, you know, once you start learning the mm-hmm. other's language, they're no longer other anymore, right?
That's right.
And so
that's
it's a right. very interesting play, and uh-huh. I see a power in that. I feel like I'm a student of language, too. I'm constantly learning uh-huh. different, you know, because there's different dialects, there's different vocabularies.
Oh, sure.
It's
yeah.
spoken differently depending on where you go in uh-huh. South America.
Yeah.
So.
I actually do that with English. I'm still interested in learning more about my own language and speaking properly, and I'm, you know, I'm like a word Nazi about people using bad language, not
right.
not dirty language, but
right.
using inappropriate
right.
English.
Although I used to say, like, Spanglish is the language of the future, just because I like the way that sounds, but...
but that's yeah. appropriate, too, in its mm-hmm. place. But, you know, I think a lot of people aren't even learning how to speak English properly, which really annoys
right.
me.
Right. It leads to kind of a dearth of a kind of... I know what you mean. Like it's kind of reducing the language to just a few set
uh-huh.
words, but there's an incredible wealth and richness to English.
Oh, there is. Yeah.
And English survived because of its ability to
uh-huh.
adapt and
uh-huh.
to incorporate many other
yeah.
influences.
So sound bites win the day, right? When
oh,
people
yeah.
don't have an education about how to use their own
well,
language and don't have a vocabulary.
Exactly. Like this is one of the things where it goes kind of along with that, with the usurping of language,
mm-hmm.
which is this new kind of newspeak coming out of the Bush administration
oh, yeah.
about the struggle. So they've appropriated that word, which has always been a word
uh-huh.
of labor movements, right? Of
right.
people's, of
right.
people's, you know, luchas, you know. So there we go. We'll use lucha instead of struggle, Mr. Bush, and take that.
That's right. It's a brave new world, 1984. I mean, science fiction has come to life during this era. The Clean Skies Initiative is actually
ooh,
polluting,
yeah.
and you know.
Yeah.
So
we'll do coal and we'll do nuclear power, and we'll have just a great energy policy, man.
Let's talk about women's studies. You've developed courses on art and revolution and nature and literature. Talk to me about some of this.
Oh, well, I have taught intro to women's studies is the course I've taught a few times, and I have learned so much in that course. The other courses you refer to, I've learned very much as well. Those are when I teach Spanish.
Mm.
And but I learned so because I kind of, you know, set up my classes as a dialogue, you know, between the teachers and the students. And I bring a lot of guest speakers in to both classes, to mm-hmm. my Latin American classes and my women's studies classes. And I find that student really resonates with students. I do, you know, they appreciate lectures too, and I definitely do that. But when it's set up kind of like a dialogue, or if I bring someone in, say, you know, someone from Planned Parenthood in the women's studies, or someone who, you know, does radio shows like yourself, or a musician, or perhaps a guest speaker that's, you know, part of the college that was willing to speak to classes. It's an incredible experience for the student.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been very nourishing for me, too, in that regard.
You are listening to Out of Bounds on WEOS. I'm Tish Perlman, and my guest is Colleen Katow, singer, songwriter, activist, and teacher. I want to talk to you about, you produced a CD called Sing It Down to benefit the movement to close the U.S. Army School of the Americas.
Yes.
Talk to me about that.
Okay. That school, the SOA, we call it the School of Assassins still. It's
mm-hmm.
but they, because, of course, the movement was so strong to change, to close the school down. They changed the name. They closed the school, very cynically said it's closed, but then they reopened it under a different name,
hmm.
which we all know about that. It's now the Western Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, or WISC. mm-hmm. But there's an incredible, actually incredible story about how the movement started. Father Roy Bourgeois, back in, I think it was It was the year after the Jesuit priests had been killed mm-hmm. In El Salvador, and he was a Maryknoll priest, but he had been in the military, and so he walked onto the base as an officer, you know, dressed as an officer with two other friends, with a tape of Father Archbishop Romero's last sermon. Mm. Archbishop Romero was assassinated mm-hmm. by someone trained at the school, and there were Salvadoran soldiers studying at the base at that time, and he and Father Roy scaled the tree, and he played the tape at about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
And it was quite an act of civil disobedience, and actually he spent quite a bit of time in jail for that. But it was the beginning of this incredible movement. It went from about 3 people to then a dozen people to then 300 people each year coming back to the base to protest on the symbolic date of November, around November 19th, whenever that weekend falls, to commemorate the death of the Jesuit priest. But, you know, they're representing tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people who were displaced, disappeared, tortured, killed by, you know, our policies and the elite's policies in Latin America. And last year, there were about 15,000 people at the gates of Fort Benning to protest there, yes, but also to organize and to vigil and to get with their different groups of solidarity, you know, Colombian groups, support groups, El Salvadoran support mm-hmm. groups, things like that. The CD that Jolie Rickman and I made, Jolie was an incredible singer-songwriter, and she actually passed away of ovarian cancer this year. So it's been a very difficult year because she was my comadre, you know. She was, I really, really, really miss her. But her music is going to be re-released, and I feel it was really an honor and to be able to record this CD with her. Mm-hmm. So we combined our different songs together, and we put together a roadshow, a multimedia roadshow, with the CD and with a couple of people who had done political active, well, who had spent time in jail because of their political activism mm-hmm. to close the base.
Wow.
Nonviolent civil disobedience to close the base. Mm-hmm. And that was a really powerful experience on many levels for me, because I saw that, you know, your average person in different communities just had no idea that the school was open. They had no idea about the history. So it wasn't like they didn't care. They just had, mm-hmm. they just were ignorant of what was going on with their tax dollars. And once, you know, we had this road show to kind of, you know, do education and dialogue, and we used music, a lot of music mm-hmm. and multimedia. And a lot of people came down to Fort Benning as a result of that. And it was just amazing to me it underscored, you know, the power of the arts, the power of song. And, mm-hmm. and now, you know, the movement has grown and includes tons of, you know, grassroots puppet theater, mm-hmm. tons of music.
And then do you think you'll really be able to close it?
Well, I'm not sure. There is, there's lobbying that's done on Capitol Hill. There is, you know, a bill in place to close the school with some supporters signing on to the bill. But in many respects, the School of the Americas, or WISC, the School of the Assassins, is kind of like the tip of the iceberg. It's a representation of bad, you know, U.S. policy.
Yeah, military complex.
And so in a way, the movement, yes, it's really strong, but it's also grown into this other kind of solidarity movement that extends beyond the school. Mm-hmm. So maybe, you know, I have hopes that the school will eventually be closed, but the incredible, what it's spawned in terms of, you know, the different movements coming together, mm-hmm. the fact that many people are aware of it now, I think it's has created a lot of consciousness, and that is also just as important and powerful.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I want you to sing another song for us.
Okay. Well, this song is a song that I wrote a year ago, January, because I was going to Lawrence, Massachusetts for a music conference there, and I had been there before, and Lawrence, Massachusetts is the site of so much labor history, and the garment workers, mostly women and children, you know, protesting for the rights, you know, to organize for the rights to have a decent wage, to have time with their families, these kinds of things. And also, I just was Every time I cross over the border between New York and Massachusetts, it just blows me away, the beauty of that area, the beauty of the Northeast, mm-hmm. and, you know, the powerful people that live here, you know. So this song is, it's some people think it's a love song to Lawrence, but Lawrence, Massachusetts, it's called Going Back to Lawrence.
I'm going back to Lawrence, to a place in time not long ago. I'm going back to Lawrence, where the workers sparked the dream. I'm going back to Lawrence, where once no brick defied the green, where east makes me retrace my step, and forest seems to separate what the highway can't connect. What is it that I'm remembering when I cross the bridge to Lawrence Town, across the mighty Berkshires, where tundra reigned before hemlock and white pine, across where the great waters flow forever. I'm going back to Lawrence. Mary Kate is organizing there. I am going back to Lawrence, Mass., where the workers sparked the dream. The crowd
lovely. Great.
Thank you. Thanks.
Are you going to come out with a new CD anytime soon? Do you have enough songs?
Well, I've been a songwriter group, the Water Street Songwriters, and you know, the goal is to write a song each month when we meet, mm-hmm. and it's been really good for me. I've been writing a lot of songs, and yeah, I'm working on a CD. I have many songs.
I'll bet you
and,
do.
Yeah. And I'm working on a CD, working on the recording, slowly but surely. So I hope to have it come out sometime next year. Mm-hmm. And actually, one of the working titles is A Different Language, because it kind of goes back to the theme that we were talking about, the importance of learning a different language, just a language of love too, you know, and peace instead of anger and arrogance.
A lot of people seem to be heading in that direction, you know, because our instinct would be to fight back with anger, but I don't think that's working.
No, I don't think so either.
Yeah. We have run out of time.
Oh, it's been really great.
Thank you so much for being with us.
All right, take care.
Out of Bounds is produced by Tim Reppert at Rep Studio in Ithaca. We are a project of the Women's Interfaith Institute in Seneca Falls. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. If you want to talk to us, you can email us at weos@hws.edu. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.